sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobic, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young, and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what's up. Welcome, bienvenue to another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, aka B Blizzak, aka Mr. Shut Up Podcast.com on the web. Before I start this show, I want to remind y'all that this podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green, and also waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Rouge et bleu is up in this bitch. I'm representing and holding it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. This episode is being recorded on the unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory on Algonquin 4:46 in the afternoon. This episode is also brought to you by the letter F. This episode is brought to you by the letter F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. If there was a bit of passion in that fuck you Whitey, it's because one of my screens, my monitors is open to a Wikipedia entry on the Gadsden flag, you know, that yellow flag with the snake on it that says don't tread on me. And what was I reading on it? Doesn't matter, but it was in the background, and it was having that image in the background just gave me the passion necessary to deliver that intro. All right, settle down, kids. Sit down. Okay, come on, kids. Settle down. Let's get the show started. I'm freestyling the intro. I'm not freestyling the intro, but I feel the need to share that this week I suffered. No, I had COVID. Turns out I got COVID, man. I don't know what the fuck. I was just as shocked as you all, because the people from the convoy had me convinced that COVID was just a hoax. That shit ain't for real. And okay, no kidding aside. I don't know if it hasn't been clear that, you know, on my fuck you Whitey, that also includes the members of the convoy and the supporters. I hate those people, man. I really that's not how I wanted to start the show, but this is where we're at. Yeah, I hate with a passion those people. I mean, I know they're human beings. I'm sure Jesus loves them. But when it comes to my capacity to love, to share love, to love other, my fellow human beings, yeah, convoy falls outside of that fucking shit. I'm not Jesus. Turn to Jesus for love, man. Try Jesus. Don't try me. Anyways, yeah. I had COVID, and I guess I'm on the lucky majority of people who didn't have any complications. Granted, I am vaccinated. I didn't get the latest booster, but I am vaccinated and got, what was the last booster? The third booster. And I had the thing for 2 weeks. Probably had it for 2 weeks. It was just this week that it made itself fucking, its presence known. I had runny nose, sore throat. Thank God I was still able to taste shit, because I would have lost my mind. You know, you can't be a fat person and can't taste anymore. Oh my God, yeah, would have lost my mind. But yeah, no,
I felt the fatigue. Every once in a while, felt the aches. And the thing about it, there was a point where it was like coming and going type of thing like that. But anyways, I ended up staying home and doing a lot of Instacart and Ubering in. So yeah, that's the thing for me. When I get sick, I get in automatic TLC mode. And that means fuck the world. I just get automatically lazy, sitting on my bed or my couch and order in like a motherfucker because I gotta heal. So I feel justified ordering in like that. But anyways, yeah. But I had COVID. I did 3 tests. First test came back negative. Second test came back positive. And then I did a third test yesterday, and it came back negative again. So I guess it came and went. It came and went. But I'm grateful. I'm grateful that it came and went. Unlike some people who didn't have that fortunate. Oh, right. The reason I was going on a rant about the convoy is... I don't know. I had a conversation with someone. It wasn't a conversation. Someone uttered an opinion that made me realize that people who are anti-vaxxers, who don't believe in the vaccine, or who believe that the virus is all a hoax, a lot of their thinking, the crust of their thinking, the fundamental of their belief is that we should not have to, we as a society should not have to give a fuck about people who are immune compromised. Even though they represent a majority, yeah, we should not have to give a fuck about them. Let nature deal with them. And to me, I think that's a very heartless thing to say, man. It's like they look at themselves as I have like very strong genes and these guys have weak. That's why I survived it. And I'm gonna get emotional on this shit. Make sure I check the levels. Usually, just when I get emotional, my levels go through the roof. Anyways, yeah. Where was I? Yeah, it's just someone said something this week about people who are immunocompromised. Is that the word? Or people who develop complications from the virus? They didn't elaborate. You know. But they just said something that made me realize that, oh, you actually don't give a fuck. It's basically like saying like, hey, you got cancer. That's not my problem. It's like that kind of shit. It's that kind of, and it just set me off the roof. And being the sensitive person that I am, shit bothered me for days. And it's just now that I'm using this microphone, this podcast as my outlet. Okay, no, that's a lie. I talked it over with a friend who shared my anger. And my friend was my outlet. But now you, as the audience, are my outlet. But yeah, man, if you are a member of the convoy, fucking believe the virus was a hoax, believe that... Shit. I need a title for these people. Yeah, believe that the virus was a hoax. Yeah, man, fuck you as a staff. Record label is as a motherfucking crew. Yeah, when I talk about Whitey, I'm also talking about you too. But B, some black people are also believe that the virus is a hoax. Well, join the bus. Get in the, you know, join the convoy. That fuck you applies to you too. That letter F that sponsors this episode is for you too. All right, not that I got that out the system. Let's get back to the agenda. Let's stick to the agenda. All right. The title of today's episode is 023 Caught Me Busting Off the Roof. And that's in reference to a verse in Nas's track One Love on the Illmatic album. And the full verse goes, but I heard, I had it right in front of me. Come on. Yeah, the verse goes, yeah, I'm ashamed that I don't know the verse, Paka. By heart, is that what you say? Like off the top of my head, yeah. I'm ashamed that I can't do that. But you know, years of weed, of all that weed, made it impossible for me. Combined with the white man, made it impossible for me to remember this shit. But yeah, so here we are. It goes. You see, the streets had me stressed up, had me stressed something terrible. Fucking with the corners, have a nigga up in Bellevue or HDM, hit a number from H to 10. You know that's not the verse. It goes. Yeah. So I come home. Nobody out but the shorty doo-wop. rolling two Phillies together in the bridge we call them. Ooh, oh my God. Okay, the verse goes. He said, Nas, niggas caught me busting off the roof, so I wear a bulletproof pack of black trade deuce. He inhaled so deep, shut his eyes like he was asleep, started coughing, one eye peeked to watch me speak. Oh my God. this week someone asked a question on Twitter. Someone asked a question. What was better, Illmatic or Ready to Die by Biggie? I'm like, come on, man. Come on. And I responded with, look, man, I was trying to be diplomatic. I said, Illmatic, not to say that Ready to Die was less important. That was me quoting Nas when he says, to my brothers and daughters, not to say that our sons are less important. So I'm trying to say that, yeah, no, Ready to Die has its place, but fuck that. Illmatic is my true love, man. When it comes to hip-hop, it's my true love. Yeah, man. Anyway, yeah. Oh my God, distracted. Yes. The reason I chose this title of this track is because over the weekend, while I was in mode TLC mode, I rewatched the movie Belly, hip hop classic Belly, and I will share some thoughts about that in the random section, the random thoughts section of this episode, which is towards the end. For those who are new, how I usually do it is in my intro, I usually talk about the title, some random history shit and whatever. And then I jump into This Week in Therapy and then end with random thoughts. So This Week in Therapy is usually like focused thoughts and random thoughts is all over the goddamn place. Anyway, all right. So, yeah, like I mentioned later, I'll be sharing some thoughts about rewatching the movie Belly. All right. So stick around. This is the part where, you know, after commercial, you don't want to miss that, so stick around. All right. Before I go on to This Week in Therapy, I feel the need to mention that, today is October 23rd. And this week in history, we had on October 20th, 1991, Tupac released Brenda's Got a Baby off his first album, Tupacalypse Now. Now, I talk about Illmatic being my first love, but Tupac is mine, like the rapper. When I talk about favorite rappers, I'm talking about Tupac. Nas has a favorite album, Illmatic missed the list, but favorite rapper, number one, Tupac. So yeah, now you know something about me. I believe I called one of my episodes. I was trying to remember this. One of my episodes, Brenda's Got a Baby, and I'm trying to remember what was I thinking? What was that about? But you know, this episode's available off the website. So if you're subscribed, should be in there. So you go listen to it, then you can tell me what I talked about in Brenda's Got a Baby. Keep going. Another thing that happened this week is 54 years ago in the city of Mexico. John Carlos and I'm trying to describe it. I'm looking at the image right now. You know that iconic image of these two black men accepting their medaille, their jewelry. Oh my God, jewelry. The awards. I can't speak English. Is it possible I got brain fog? Oh my God. John Carlos. You know what? I'm gonna have to read the entries I'm gonna fuck up the John Carlos. Who am I explaining this to? If I say John Carlos, you know exactly what I'm talking about. All right. John Carlos West. American former track and field athlete. Okay, let's just pop up the John Wesley Carlos, born June 5th, 1925, is an American former track and field athlete and a professional football player. He was a bronze medal winner in the 200 meters at the 1968 Summer Olympics, where he displayed the Black Power salute on the podium with Tommy Smith. He went on to tie the world record in the 100-yard dash. And, 1960. Yeah, anyway, okay. The point is, the two black guys showing the black power fist at the Olympics, you know, that symbol, well, that happened 54 years ago on, when's the exact date? Does it matter? John Carlos, career, accepted the award. October 10th. You know what? I should have did my research. But my point is, it came up on my timeline. And I felt the need to share with y'all, all right? Okay, if this episode had an album cover, had a graphic, I think I would have used that one. I'm starting to think that, yeah. Okay, on October 21st, is that when it happened? Oh, you know what? Check this out. I'm going to right-click and go search in Google Lens. Right-click on the image, search in Google Lens, and then find image source. And then 1968 Olympics Black Power Salute. That's what I should have said. Yes, the Black Power Salute. So during the medalist ceremony, October. Oh, this should happen on October 16th. Which is not something that happened this week. Hold on. Does October 16 count that as this week? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. All right. Huh. Yeah, I still got a residential cough. What are the odds of you catching COVID through this digital stream? That'd be some amazing shit. Well, less than amazing. It'd be unfortunate for you, but it would suck. Anyways, yeah, that's all I got for this week in history, or shit that happened this week. I'm not done, you know. That's what random thoughts are about. There's gonna be more thoughts I'm gonna share with you, but let's jump into this week in therapy. Now, because I was sick all week, I actually did not go into my therapy session this week and stayed home. And the previous week before, I also didn't go because of the white man's holiday, Thanksgiving. Is Thanksgiving a white man's holiday? Well, of course it is. Anyway, yeah. So my point is, oh, I guess you don't know. I go to therapy every week. I've been going to therapy for every week on a weekly basis. And since I started this habit, 2 weeks is probably the longest I've ever gone without going into therapy. And no, I didn't freak out. That's what counts. But I did have a lot of time to think about why I am in therapy, why I'm going into therapy. And also had me thinking about, well, two things. How did I manage to convince myself to go into therapy? And two, what keeps me going? What kept me going? First time, the both incidents that I went into therapy, it was usually shit was hectic. Shit was hectic in my mind. I was like, I felt like I was close to, like Rakim, close to the edge. I think I don't want to know the ledge. Yeah. I think he's talking about respect. Yeah, no to the ledge. I think he's talking about his limits. But I was close to, no, okay, not Rakim. Cool G Raps got a track called The Edge of Sanity. And both occasions where I went, I felt like I was on the edge of sanity. Like I was just getting ready to like jump off that cliff. I once had this image when I was going through my things. I had this image of, and it might have been the weed. Weed definitely was probably didn't help. But I remember I was with this person and I had smoked a lot of weed. And I remember reaching, a lot. I'm talking edibles and all that shit. And my brain felt like it was like, hey, we about to snap. I can't explain it. But I remember freaking the fuck out and having an image of being in a confrontation, like seeing a confrontation with the cops that ends with me blacking out and then me waking up, bloodied up, beaten up, my back, my hands behind my back, cuffed with police. And cuffed with police, and one of them saying, "What the fuck's wrong with this nigger?" And then putting me in a paddy wagon. I think I have this fear of losing control of my mental capabilities. Like, if I was wondering, when people who go insane, are they aware that they're insane, or it just feels like, nah, this is just regular. I just don't know. Like, to them, everything is normal. They're just looking at everyone else, wondering, "What the fuck's your problem?" Like you're walking around pants down, talking about I'm cuckoo for Cocoa Puff, and to you that shit is normal. Like I don't know what it is, but anyway, I felt like I was getting close to figuring out what it means to be insane. So both situations where I ended up in therapy, I remember feeling like if you don't do something about this shit, it's just going to get worse. Like you're going to get past the point. Basically, you were close to the edge of sanity, and that usually ended up being the first time I ended up convinced myself, threw myself and just engage. Like, you know, usually when you talk to a therapist, you have like a consultation. And I remember that consultation being, yeah, man, fuck consultation. I'm ready to walk in now. And the thing is, I was so fucked up. And she could have said that, yeah, my rates are like $3,000 per hour. I would have said yes. Only thing is, I'm going to have to steal this money, though. Yeah, I just knew I needed help. That's the point. I remember being close to the edge of sanity, needing help. And luckily, someone was at the other end, able to open the door and greet me as their patient. And yeah, I'm thinking about all the Sopranos and the Sopranos. Tony Soprano went into therapy after too many panic attacks. No, yeah, he's having panic attacks, and his doctors were like, yeah, you should talk to a therapist. He didn't feel like he needed it, but he was like, fuck it, man. Let's just, doctor can't help me. Let's see what the fucking therapist says. And I guess my point is, I wish going into therapy wasn't such a big deal. But then again, I think about how sometimes I've had like a weird cough, breathing weird, a little pain. Like, I'm also that guy who hates going to the hospital for nothing. My mom was the kind of person that, you just sneeze wrong, she's like, oh, you need to go to the hospital. She didn't take you there, but she'd be like, yep, nah, fuck that. That's a slippery slope. One day you're sneezing, tomorrow you got AIDS. Get your ass to the hospital. She was really big on, she just panicked a lot and just like, but was really big on get your ass to the hospital. That's why I don't like coughing around my mom, because she'll freak out. Anyway, but she was really big on going to the hospital. And every once in a while, like out of the 300 times she would tell me to go to the hospital, I would go. And then I'd go to the hospital, and then the nurse would be like, or the doctor nurse would be like, it's nothing serious. You just got a cough. You just got a this. You just got a that. And I would regret going. But my point is, I kind of wish going into therapy was as simple as walking into the hospital. Granted, pride is a motherfucker. Pride is a motherfucker. Yeah. So I'm just trying to get back to, I wish going into therapy didn't require people to be in extreme situation. Says the guy who went into therapy after being in an extreme situation. But here we are. Now I'm thinking about how during that 2 weeks, I haven't not gone to therapy. I was thinking about how I feel like I've been, while feeling sick, I had a moment where I was just fun. I found myself feeling, reflecting on, like, this dread came over me on, yo, my life is fucking empty. The thought crossed my mind that of this huge, like, I'm staring at this emptiness called my life. And at first I was telling myself, is that why I'm going to therapy? So I can distract myself from that thought. But then it hit me, nah, I'm going to it because so I can deal with it. Because right now I'm looking at this fucking dread, this emptiness, and it's just depressing. And it's got me wishing that, you know, you know what? If I were to die, it wouldn't be a big deal. It wouldn't be a big deal. I wouldn't have to think about this fucking emptiness called my fucking life. Now, I say this, I kind of wish that I was a painter or a poet where I wasn't saying this shit, talking about, you know, this life of mine on a microphone, on a fucking podcast. I would prefer to put it in a picture or in a really nice poem or a really great rap song and with a nice beat. And that just, like, when I say this shit, I'm hoping people can relate to it. I don't want to hear from you people who, like, I have a solution for that. Nah, fuck that. Because usually, this is where, you know, usually people hear that goes, oh, you're feeling empty? Let me talk to you about Jesus. Oh, you're feeling empty? Let me talk to you about cryptocurrency. Oh, you're feeling empty? Fuck these bitches. It's all these bitches' fault. Like, that's how people wait for you to get in this position for you to, so they can, like, pounce and give you things to fill in that void. Are you feeling empty? Have you discovered crack yet? Have you tried crack? Yeah. But where I was going with this is, yes, I went from, damn, feeling empty, but to reminding myself, that's why I've been going to therapy on a weekly basis, because of this fucking dread, this vast emptiness called my fucking life. And I'm just trying to figure out ways to, like, deal with it. Now, granted, you know, someone might say that, you know, maybe I'm looking for a spiritual solution. Mental solution might not there, but it doesn't matter. But my point is, what counts for me, I think what makes me feel better is the idea that I'm doing something about it. That's really what it doesn't look like much. It doesn't feel like I'm not making progress on a regular, but the idea that I'm doing something about it makes me feel better. Whether I make, even if I make the smallest minute progress, doesn't matter, but I love the idea that I'm doing something about it. By the way, I was thinking of, this episode was nearly titled Picture Perfect, because I was thinking about how difficult it was for me to admit those feelings and how I didn't want to say this shit on a podcast, and I would rather that it was just a beautiful, like a picture. Like, how would you, if you had to draw a picture to symbolize how you, to describe your feeling about life in the moment, what would you choose? I'm thinking gray sky. No, I was thinking of an image of this dude in a restaurant, and after he's done eating and he's paid his bill, and the wait staff, the whole restaurant staff is like staring at him like, get the fuck out. And in the front door, it's like a pile of people waiting to get in. And all these people want this guy's table. Want this guy's table, because it's like, yo, time for you to get the fuck out the way so another group of paying customers can take this table. That would be the image that I would draw. Yeah. Yeah. All right. That concludes this week's In Therapy. Now I'm going to jump into random thoughts. I really need, right now on my board, I have the word what's next. Actually, it's what next. I forgot to put the apostrophe S after the what, but what's next. I have a board to like keep me motivated, and it's like direction. And by that, I mean, what are you doing with this podcast, B? What next? What do you want to, what are you trying to do next? What's the next? Like on the same board I had, title, this, like huge projects, directions, and things like that. But right now, I haven't figured out what I want to do next. But there is one thought that has crossed my mind on the list of what next is, I'm thinking on doubling the amount of episodes I release. So at the moment, I'm doing an episode a week, and I'm thinking I'm doing a Wednesday episode. Yeah, a Wednesday episode. I don't know why my ribs are hurting. This chair is not here. Let me try this. Yeah. I'm thinking on doing a Wednesday episode because, well, for two reasons. The first one is, you know, the demand. There's a lot of people out there that was just been demanding for to hear more of what I've got to say. So supply and demand, you know what I mean? So I'm trying to supply these fiends with this and trying to give them a hit. No, I'm kidding. The reason why, I'll be honest with you, this podcast is more for me than it is to whoever's listening. This is like my moment to be selfish. I'm taking up all the time I need. I'm speaking at the volume I want to speak at. I talk about the shit that I want to talk about. This podcast is more for me. This podcast at the moment is me being pure selfishness. If that creates an audience, I'll be fucking amazed. I'll be like, it's going to be, for the first time, I'm let me put it this way. If I get an audience from being selfish, I'm going to start believing in the miracles. But now, yeah, at the moment, it's my attempt to be selfish. So, yeah, the reason why I'm thinking on having a Wednesday episode or a midweek episode is because I forget what I was listening to or where I read this, but essentially, it was one of these tips, you know, to make your life more enjoyable and shit like that is have something to look forward to in the middle of your week. That way you can break down your week. So that way when Monday starts, because I, look, trust me, when Monday starts, I fucking hate Monday. Like when Friday ends, when Sunday, yeah, when Sunday start, Sunday ends, I'm already thinking about Friday. So I'm thinking on having recording on Wednesday just to have something to break up my week. Like, I enjoy recording these shit. I enjoy publishing these things. It's my moment to be creative. The only problem with recording on Wednesday is I would have to figure out how to shorten that, shorten my prep time, because on Sundays I don't have as much time as I have on Sunday. What did I say? On Wednesdays, I don't have as much time as I have on Sunday. Like, so I would probably have like an hour. It would be a shorter episode. And if this shit got more serious, I guess Sunday would be my Patreon, would be the paid episode, and Wednesday would be the free one. I don't know. But my point is, if I did it on Wednesday, it would have to be shorter. My prep time would have, recording time would be shorter, and my prep time would be, I'd have less time to fuck around on Wednesdays. But anyway, that's in the thought. It's in the mix. I'm just considering it. I've given this more thought than I needed to give to it. All right, next item on my on my random thought was how I rewatched Belly. Now, I'm not going to do a full movie review of the movie Belly. So if you like the movie, don't worry. I know I'm not about to shit on it. But I found myself enjoying it more this time around. It kind of helped that I was high on the weed, and I don't know if you heard in the previous episode, I talk about how when I'm high, listening to music or watching a movie, it's like I surrender myself to the creator. Well, not God, but I mean like the creator of this piece of art. It's kind of like I listen to it like I enjoy this shit. Like I analyze every single bit of it. It's as if I'm sitting next to the room of the person who created this art form or the actors, and I'm having a conversation with them of, okay, why did you do it this way? Why did you talk? Why did you express it that way? Anyway, found myself enjoying the movie even more. Now, before I go into how much I enjoyed it, one thought that crossed my mind is while watching the movie Belly is it had me thinking about I grew up, I'm surrounded. At first I was going to blame Ottawa, but no, I was going to say it's a personality type. I think I attract them too. But I am very used to people who just love to complain. Now, not complain. Not just complain. This is a special kind of complain. It's more, if you create something, they love, and I mean love, oh my God, they get a boner off of it, love shitting on it. They just love shitting on things. I remember reading this book called The Greatest Salesman in the World, and I can't remember which one of the scriptures, but there's a part where it talks about how it's so fucking easy to criticize shit. It takes more work to like praise, find reason. Like, it's so easy to find something to find reason to criticize someone than it is to praise someone. It's so easy to fucking be the asshole who has a problem with the solution than being the person who has the solution to the problem. Are you hearing what I'm saying? Anyway, yeah, so so I've gotten so used to being surrounded by these kind of people that first time around while I watching Belly, I was like looking for every reason not to like this movie. Like, it's kind of like those people were in my mind already pointing out, okay, this sucks. Why did they do it this way? Basically, it's like I prepare myself for the one person who's going to be like, you like the movie Belly? Really? You thought the movie Belly was a good movie? Like, look, the average hip-hop fan, you know, I'm not going to generalize. Yeah, fuck it. Shut up, podcast. It's my podcast. I'm going to generalize. But the average rap fan, hip-hop fan, Nas fan, DMX fan loves the movie Belly. I think you're obligated to. I don't think you have the right. But if you're like a film critic in the Oscars or, you know, them fucking what do you call those people? Movie Nazis? What's that word? Like the purist types. Yeah, Purist Type will tell you how much Belly was a terrible movie. But anyways, yeah. I know it kind of sounds like I'm blaming other people for my behavior because I was criticizing the movie. But no, I found myself getting into automatic watch this movie like it was the greatest thing ever. Like, it's not that I forced myself to watch it. I'm like, oh, I understand what the person who made this movie, what they were trying to do. That's what I was, that's what allowed me to enjoy this movie. Like, for example, there's a scene where I realized that in order to enjoy movies like Belly, you gotta go through it like the Bible. What do I mean by that? In that the Bible, nothing in the Bible makes sense. It's not meant to be fucking accurate. people will tell you, no, it's the word of God. It's author. Nah. Fuck you, man. There's a lot of storytelling. There's a lot of like figure of speech and shit like that. So in Belly, like it hit me at the beginning of the movie Belly. Spoiler alert, it starts out with Nas and DMX, the main characters of the movie, walking in to the song of Are You Ready? What's going on? What's the name of that song again? However you want it, however you need it, however. Okay, you know, I know I'm singing this wrong. Belly movie soundtrack. Excuse me. What's the name of that song again? Never Dreamed. Oh shit! I gotta get this album. Oh my god, this is the first time I Google the soundtrack for the movie Belly. Oh wow, there's some like great titles, but the one I'm looking for is the fuck is that name of that song? Soul to Soul, Jesus Christ, that's the name of the band. Soul to Soul. Every once in a while, my brain surprises me. There we go. Back to life, back to reality. Back to life. Yo, okay, that should have been the title of this song, but that's not what it is. Anyways, the movie starts with Nas, DMX, and this other guy. I think it's the dude who plays Weebay in The Wire, the third guy, getting out of a nice car. I love this. they cut in line to get in the club, and all this shit is in slow motion. I think, what's the name of that dude who... doesn't matter, right? It's like rap video style. And they go in, they walk into a club in slow motion, and they establish like they're the motherfucking man. Like, if you gotta walk into a club, that's how you wanna walk in. Like, coming out of a nice expensive car, dressed all nice in leather, and then having everyone wanting to be your friend and say, hey, and wanting to say hi to you, and you know, you just walking like you don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Bitches are wilding and shit like that. You know, like, the dream, the ultra masculine dream, like they established that you're the motherfucking man. And I remember first watching, okay, and then the next scene follows it to they go to the washroom, find guns, and then I guess they go to the help desk, to the main office of the club, and they rob it, and you know, they shoot the people there, and they create a big commotion, and they steal the money and run away. So for me, that scene kind of bothered me. I'm like, well, hold on a second. Are you guys going clubbing, or are you guys trying to rob the place? Because that's two different motherfucking activities. Like, the first time I watched it, that fucking scene bothered me. I'm like, how are you going to rob a club? And then, but after, like, what was the point on wearing masks? Like, I was, that inner critic was driving me, like, the logic was all wrong. But I realized the point to that scene where they combined is to show that they're the motherfucking man. That was the whole, that's the only takeaway you should have gotten from that scene is they're the motherfucking man. That's all. Should have been at. Like, it's a fantasy. It's like, I'm trying to think of like the author tells you a story, and the point to the story is to make you realize, look, like they're going to bend the reality, but what they're trying to convey by the end of this scene, of this activity, by the end, you're supposed to be like, yeah, that's who I want to be. I want to be the guy who walks in the club, who gets to cut in line, who people wants to say hi to, like women want to wish they were my girlfriend and or want to sex me, and I remember walking into a club and feeling so insignificant. But if I'm walking in the club with the idea that I'm gonna rob the place, I feel less insignificant. I feel like I'm a problem. Like I'm the reason why. What's that lyric by? If it wasn't for this rap shit, I'm the reason why you guys need dental plan. Anyways, yeah. So. so that's what, okay, I probably myself, I wasn't gonna make a movie review, but my point is, I'm saying, once I finally accepted that the whole point to that scene was just to say that these main characters are the motherfucking man, once I accepted that, I'm like, oh, I'm enjoying this movie. Second thing, and I will stop there. Wait, actually, what did I put down for my notes? I said, surrounded by critics. Yeah, yeah, okay, I got rid of that. Okay, the last thing I'm gonna leave it at that is Nas's character. Like Nas's character in the movie, like first you have DMX. DMX, incredible actor. DMX establishes that, yeah, I'm a gangster. He played Tommy Buns, and then Nas was playing Sincere. And that's the name of these characters, right? Like DMX convinces me that, yeah, I'm the crazy motherfucker in the group. I'm the guy who's the problem. I'm the guy who would rob a discotheque, who does crazy shit, who discotheque, who would rob a club and in broad daylight, do stupid shit like that, or shoot your mom while she for talking smack. Like, he's crazy local. Take all your violent rap lyrics. He's the personification of that shit. Yeah, he establishes that. Nas, not so much. And I felt like Nas was trying to portray the image that I'm a similar gangster like DMX's character. So first time I watched, I'm like, yeah, that's a fail. But then I stepped back and thought of Nas being, maybe the relationship between Nas's character and DMX's character is kind of like Lucky Luciano and what's his name? Meyer Lansky, is that what's his name? God bless the internet. Meyer Lansky, yes. Now, I don't know if you guys are familiar with I'm not a teacher in this shit. Watch the movie, watch the TV show on HBO, Boardwalk Empire. You'll get a better image of the relationship between Charles Lucky Luciano and Meyer Lansky. Charles Lucky Luciano, he was the thug. But he was smart. He's the one. Charles Lucky Luciano was the one with the temper and all that shit. And Meyer Lansky was the smart one, was the business one, and was the thinker in the group. Is Meyer Lansky Jewish? Yes, he was. But anyways, I'm not gonna pretend like I read the book, the actual history books. But the understanding that I have is in their relationship, this duo, it was a beautiful duo. Meyer Lansky, you know, he wasn't a punk. He fought, but that wasn't his image. He portrayed himself as being I'm the thinker in the group. And once I let go of, okay, maybe Nas is not trying to convince me that he's another Tommy Buns. No, he's the mastermind. He's probably the one who Tommy will say, hey, we should rob these guys. And Sincere is the guy who's like, okay, let's plan this shit out. And the reason why the relationship is so, they have a relationship is because they probably love each other as brothers, but they also useful to each other. They both have this relationship like, yeah, this person completes me. The reason I'm laughing is because some of you might be playing the pause game. It's like, wait a minute, you're trying to say they're gay? I'm saying, one was the heart, the other was the mind. One was like, you know, just two duos that when they come together, they accomplish great things. So maybe these two men recognized each other's skills, and they realized that us combining together, All this, all us combining together, we can do great things. All this to say, it was the first time watching it in that way. I was like, okay, now their relationship, now their friendship makes sense. So finally, once I was able to get those two, you know, watch the movie like it was the Bible and establish their relationship like they were just basically the black Lucky Luciano, Meyer Lansky. Then I was able to enjoy the movie. It was a great movie. Now, okay, hold on a second. I say great movie with the caveat that by today's standards, it's like there's a lot of problematic aspects in that movie, like the misogyny, the sexism, the toxic masculinity. You know, okay, B, why you gotta ruin this shit? I'm just trying to say, look, it's interesting how my younger self, who was problematic, didn't like the movie, but the older me, it is kind of interesting, the older me who's trying to get away from that problematic behavior is finally able to accept the movie. It is kind of interesting. Life is kind of funny that way. But yes, all this to say that I'm giving it 2 thumbs up. It was a great movie. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. Would I recommend it to white people? Fuck no. Would I recommend? Yeah, no, just all this to say that on the list of things to be grateful for this week, rewatching Belly with that mindset is on my list. There we go. All right. Next on the list, I got the item. I feel old like Body. I feel old like Bodhi from The Wire. How they bring this up is because I'm thinking of, I think, yeah, it was this week, a quote by Van Leighten that just had me thinking. I feel old like Bodhi. Getting back to something I was saying in This Week in Therapy, how if I can draw how I feel being that the person in the restaurant, basically feeling like life is being a bitch and now telling me to get the fuck out of the restaurant so other paying customers can use your table. I didn't hear Van Lathan make that quote. Someone else said it, and I just can't. It might have been, I should mention that I listened to a lot of other people's podcasts. At some point, I might make a list of other podcasts, but it might have been, what's his name? The fuck's his name? J.L. Colvin, who, by the way, for those who don't know, represents the Rouge et Bleu, well, not to the fullest. I mean, you know, he's half Haitian. Well, he's Haitian, but the homeboy's Haitian, and but he's not your stereotypical Haitian. Jean Baptiste, comment ça va? Anyway, yeah, he's I don't know why I did that, but yeah. My point is, I'm claiming him. For those of you who don't know, J.L. Colvin, fucking comedian, podcaster, and friends of the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Like, literally, he was a... Anyway, I think he might have brought it up. And it'd be fucked up if it's not him who mentioned it. I should give the credit to the right person. But my point is, someone quoted Van Leighten. I forget the context, but he just said... He was just talking about hip-hop, and he was saying how in hip-hop, the worst thing you can be is old. Which also had me thinking about a verse by Little Brother, Fonte from Little Brother, and where he talks about how... I'm done with rap. I'm done the rap game. The rap game's no country for old men. And I bring this up with the backdrop of I feel old is I am feeling older, but I'm also feeling like it's done for me. Sure, I'm in my 40s, but I feel like anything I could have contributed to life should have been before, while I was young. But now, I ain't got shit to contribute. At this moment, all I'm doing is this podcast and waiting for my I know it said inheritance. My retirement to kick in, which is like 10, 15, 20 years from now. My boy, it's a long time away. I'm not those people who are with kids looking forward for their kids to grow up to looking at their kids and, you know, their first walk, their first word, their first walk, grade 1, 2, 3, high school, college and that shit. No, I don't have any of this shit to look forward to. I just have my own empty life. Now, I say this shit not to depress you, but I feel like I'm onto something. I'm describing the feeling that I believe that I'm not the only one who's feeling it. It's just one of those things that we rarely talk about. It's like being a grown man. I can't speak for women on this one, but this is speaking for myself. Is just reaching at a point in your life and you're just asking yourself, what's next? What, man? What am I doing next? What is there left for me to do? Where the fuck is this ship going? Because at the moment, everywhere it's been has been pointless. You know what I mean? It's like, I remember a friend of mine sent me an article about men who get divorced and after a divorce, and like this, a certain emptiness that happens in their lives. Like they, I'm saying what I'm feeling, I don't believe is unique to my 47-year-old single self. I would not be surprised if there are men who are married or who look like they've got it all together who are feeling that way. They're just at a point in their lives and they just like, they look at their lives and it's just this huge, this vast infinite of fucking emptiness. And they're just trying to figure out what to fill it I don't even know if I'm trying to fill it with anything. Sometimes I feel like I enjoy this emptiness because it gives me, if you've seen the movie Fight Club, there's a scene in Fight Club at the beginning where the main character is hugging this big fat dude and he says something like how he found freedom in giving up on all hope. It's kind of like that. It's like, fuck hope, man. Fuck aspiration. Fuck having dreams. I'm just going to let the fear of failure dominate me. I'm just going to get comfortable with that shit. That's what I'm trying to say I'm at. And again, I don't want to hear from you assholes talk to me about, oh, that's bad. You shouldn't feel that way. Let me tell you how to fix this problem. No, I don't want to hear from you assholes. I want to talk about something that, I want to just bring up something that rarely gets discussed. That's like, school couldn't have prepared us for that. It's one of those shit in life that, yeah, you're just going to have to experience it. And good luck figuring out the answer, because no one's got answers for you. Or maybe they do, but, you know, I ain't trying to hear from them. Or maybe there is one person who's got the answer, but that person is surrounded by a bunch of fucking assholes who want you to buy into their answers. Like, cult leaders feed on that shit. So yeah, man, that's what I mean when I say I feel like I'm getting old. Now, Grant and Bodie in The Wire, when he said it, he meant it in a completely different context, but I'm feeling old, and it's like, but like, not just old, it's more pointless. I'm feeling old, and it's like useless. I'm feeling old, like I'm just in the way. I remember when my, I'm thinking about all my older relatives. Granted, they were in their 90s, and they're just on that hospital bed. Yeah, on that hospital bed. They're still alive, but can't move, just on lying on that hospital, can't talk, can't do shit. And they're just surrounded by people just looking at them going, so can you like, you know, pass away tomorrow so next week I can plan a vacation? Because, you know, I can't plan my vacation. You know, I can't be in Dominican Republic and have you die while I'm in Dominican Republic. So can you like wrap this? Like, they're surrounded by people just like looking at them going, can you like wrap this up? And when their death comes, we're all acting surprised that, oh shit. Like, I hate that. It's like, oh, they're gone too soon. Look, come on, man. In the fucking 90s, man. Like, quit acting like we weren't waiting for them to die. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm laughing. It's sad, but funny. I know this shit is depressing. I'm not trying to depress you, but I'm just saying it's some real shit. Being at that point in your life where you feel like you're surrounded by people just waiting for you to die. And what do you do then? Now, you know what? Some people would say, well, that's why you need Jesus in your life. You know, I'm willing to believe there are people in church right now who have religion, who could preach every verse in the Bible, but feel that fucking emptiness. They're only pretending that this Jesus shit is filling them up. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to shit on people's faith with people's relationship with Jesus. I'm not talking against that. I'm talking about the people who their relationship with Jesus is bullshit, and it's not like doing what it's meant to do. Like fill that void for them. Their relationship with Jesus. It's like a nice car. It's just that thing they have to make them look like who they're not. That's what I'm trying to say. So, like, if you could get behind their layers, they're just sitting there looking at the fucking vast emptiness. Man, that should have been the title of this episode. But no, I had to go with niggas busted off the roof. Did I mention why? Did I make a link to? Oh, my God. Okay. Oh, my God. I'm embarrassed. Okay. part of why the title of this episode was, I'm so mad at myself. Part of why the reason the title of this episode is Busted Off the Roof is because in the movie Belly, there's a scene where Nas reenacts something he says in his rap verse. There's a scene where Nas is talking to a young man, and he describes him as, yo, he's a loser. And he doesn't mean like loser, like he doesn't mean like loser as in to diss him. He means like, yo, this poor kid, I grew up a fucking screw up, and adults are just looking at him. It's like, yeah, man, he's ain't no bright future for this kid. He's either gonna die or end up in jail. And and he's just talking to this kid, and there's a bit of but Nas's character is being the older guy. He doesn't look down on him. He's just trying to, as Nas describes it, he puts some juice in his skull in his, how did he say it? Anyway, yeah, he puts it's interesting. He in the movie he gives him actually a, like he's talking to this young kid, and he actually gives him a piece of jewel, and he says, "Yo, do what you want with it, whatever you want with it." But I kind of hope that dude, like, he's trying to school this kid and say, yo, this life sucks, bro. Don't. He sees this kid imitating him, and he's trying to explain to him how, like, yo, this street life sucks. It's not, you don't want that for yourself, but while accepting that, yeah, this kid doesn't have a lot of options for himself. And if he's in this street life, then things aren't going real great for him. Anyway, yeah. So there's a part where he says the line, niggas caught me busting off the roof. I'm a little confused what he means by that, because I know busting means shooting guns, but he says niggas caught me busting off the roof. So I'm not sure if he means, I'm sure it's like someone's listening to this going, no, it simply means this. But like, is he like, because black people don't do like shooting people, you know, like serial killers, like picking people off from the roof. That's white people shit. Or is he saying like he saw an enemy and or like did his rival gang caught him with a gun while he's on the roof? I'm not sure, but the point is niggas caught him busting off the roof. And now as a result of that incident, now it's like I'm deeper into the thug life shit. And then as a reason, now I got to walk around with a gun and shit like that. And yeah, basically, I got minutes to live on this life because a lot of people want me dead. Anyways, yeah, so that's where I'm going with this shit. All right, okay, so I covered rewatched Belly and feeling old. That's just a random thought. All right, so what else? I got three more to go. Okay, I'm going to play a clip of, I called it the something that Trevor Noah said. I won't make it long, but I'm just going to play it. And then, do I have time? Yeah, okay. I'm going to play it. Fuck it. We're already here. Okay. I'm going to play the clip. How long is it? Okay. If it's too long, if it's more than 5 minutes, I'm going to summarize it myself. Hold on a second.
Did you see this thing today? I think it was trending for a moment on Twitter about like the right to sex. Did you see this? Did you see this? It was one of the wildest conversations people were having. And I think part of it came down to bad branding or whatever. But But essentially, I think there was a Washington Post article that came out saying that men in their 30s are having less sex than ever before, you know, in history. Just men are not having, like, and I think it was framed as, and forgive me, but I'm paraphrasing, it was like framed as they're not having enough sex or not having as much sex as they would like to have, and the number has gone down dramatically over the past few decades. And so obviously that study came out, and I was reading that, and the first thing I thought was like, well, you don't know how much people are having sex. You know how much people told you they're having sex. That's the first thing. But even if it is true, it was interesting to see the conversations that came afterwards, you know, because then some people were saying, this is why we need to have a right to sex in this country. You know, you need to have a right to sex. No, and that's why I say bad branding. I think what some people were saying was, you know, we need to decriminalize sex work in America and in the world because we've created these structures that now make people ashamed or, and that conversation, I don't even think I'm, you know, close to being qualified to speak on. I think sex workers have actually started many great conversations around how they think the industry should be formalized and changed. But what I did find was, I found it interesting how the framing always talks about men and sex alone. No, but it never talks about two things. One, very seldom in society do we talk about how the expectation of sex was often set by a society controlled by men, and women were just subject to it, you know? And as that has changed, you would hope that now the dynamics would change. It also makes it seem so one-dimensional. They go like, women, you know, men aren't having the sex that they want to have or wish to have. And I go like, how much sex do they think they're supposed to have? Let's start there. Secondly, like, do they think they're entitled to the sex? And third, and most importantly for me, and I really feel like we don't speak about this enough, is people don't realize how often men are experiencing a lack of intimacy. And the only place that they can experience that intimacy is through sex. We've created a society where men are so afraid to be vulnerable with each other, to be, you know, sensitive with each other, to care for each other, to love each other. You know, even saying that as a guy, you always have to change and be like, you can't just say, I love you. You have to be like, I love you, dog. You know what I mean? you got to throw it like you can't just say it.
All right, I got to cut this here. I don't have the rights to this shit. I'm not even sure I'm allowed to play all of the. It was a 5 minute 3 second clip, and what you just heard was the first 2 minutes 43 seconds, and I'm not even sure I have the right to do all that shit. But we'll find out if this clip gets deleted, then this episode gets deleted, then I'll know why. Anyways, I'll remove it from, in if I get any flack from whoever. The people who index my Apple or Google give me flack for this clip, then I'm going to delete it. All right, now what I'm trying to get at is what I love about this explanation. So first, the link to this clip will be in the show notes. You can enjoy yourself there. And so you can hear the rest of it. But I love how he addressed. I think it's a big deal. It's a serious question. It's a serious point of the possibility that how men might be confusing sex with intimacy, or their quest for sex is really part of it is just intimacy. I mean, I can, like, I'm agreeing with him. I'm agreeing with this shit. I'm gonna speak for myself. And it just had me thinking about how I grew up being, well, A, you got sensitive, and also I'm a hugger. I'm the hugging type. What? Yeah. And I was just thinking about how the short list of people that I feel comfortable hugging without feeling bad about it. I don't, you know, like with men, when I greet men, you know, if we're close, I'll give you the bro hug. Yeah, I do the bro, you know, the salutation bro hug, whatever. It's a natural thing. I it's like an automatic thing. I try to hold back on doing it because not everyone is cool with that. With women, I used to like the women who, of course, you know each other, but who greet you with hugs. I've always appreciated that, but I know not everyone is cool with that. They just want handshake or no touching whatsoever. But I'm getting at how if I've hugged you, it wasn't a sexual thing. It was never a weird thing. It was a, I hope this hug makes you feel as good about yourself as it's making me feel good. I like this human connection. Like I wasn't trying to be weird. Like, I guess I what I'm thinking about is every time I've given someone a hug and they've taken it as they thought I was being weird. They felt it was weird. And that was not my intention. I remember being at a young age and hugging my parents or hugging a grown-up, like a relative, whatever. And I can sense a little, like a brief moment of happiness. Like they enjoyed it. They're like, oh, man, thank you, man. I was feeling like shit at the moment. It felt like it healed. It healed them, kind of thing. Like, I enjoyed it. Well, I enjoyed it too because one is I have this habit of feeling, of always feeling like, what's that word? Like I need to get on this person's good side, and hugs usually did that. And yeah, I'm sorry, I'm getting off topic, but I'm saying he's speaking to an important point on how with women it's how they hug each other. They can practice intimacy, but with men, we're a bunch, man. We're a very weird bunch. My mom actually once told me, because you know she caught me hugging a lot, and one day she stopped me. She said, "Well, why don't you find a wife to marry, so you can hug her instead of us," and something like that. And I'm like, she didn't get it, and she meant well, but my mom, and both parents, bought into the idea of the toxic masculinity. Men aren't supposed to be into their emotions. It's not, you know, it's not normal for men to have emotions. They should be like, you know, pimping hoes and slamming Cadillac doors. That's what real man is about. And these guys are Christian too. But yeah, no, I remember there was a time where where I hugged so many times that my mom just took it for granted. It was just like, hey, yo, stop hugging, man. Come on, man. You're a grown man. You don't need to do that. Now she's always grateful that I go in for the hugs. But I'm just getting back to the point of Trevor Noah. You know, yeah, getting back to the point of Trevor Noah is I agree with that notion. How, yeah, when he talks about sex work should be legalized. Yeah, no, I remember telling a woman who worked as a sex worker and saying, I know it didn't make sense in that. I mean, it didn't, like, to me it made sense, but I said, like, I feel like there's something noble about a woman, I should say a human being, but a woman willing to use her body to allow another human being to feel good about themselves. In that moment, I remember, look, man, okay. Yeah, no, sex work is real work. Yes, okay. There's a shitty side to sex work. It's dangerous. I won't lie. I won't deny it. It can be dangerous. It's not legal. These poor women have I know men could be sex workers too, but I'm gonna focus on the women doing the sex work. These poor women have like no legal recourse when if they get fucked over, if they have a violent incident, they can't go to the cops. They're being looked down on. But I feel like the ones who do it right, who do it well, who treat it like who... Look, man, in this world, there are shitty people and there are good people in anything. I was going to say, even in the Klan, I'm sure there's a good person and there's a shitty person within the Klan. Okay, well, I mean, sure, I won't like either of them, but I'm just saying, in any situation, there's always one person who's like, God sent, and the other one who is anyway. And I'm just trying to say that even in the sex worker, the ones who like take this shit serious, who understand that what Trevor Noah is saying, like, granted, maybe some of them might be taking advantage of the fact that a man just wants intimacy. That's not my point, but I'm saying what he's talking about is real and also goes on the list of things that doesn't get talked about enough. I'm not going to expand more because, you know, yeah, I'm not going to expand more, but I'm just going to say that I'm going to leave it at that. It was, it just had me thinking after hearing this clip. All right, two more things. Okay, yeah, actually, this one is it's going to be really quick. I said another thought about voting. Yeah, this week, I think I'm supposed to be voting for a municipal election. Now, I'm going to start preaching about... No, and yeah, I think I'm supposed to be voting. But the thing about voting voting has always felt, unlike my white Canadian friends, I believe a lot of them just take that shit for granted. Me, voting has always, it feels like, oh, the white man is letting me play in his game. It's like, I don't look at it as privilege or a right. Yeah, it's not a privilege or a right. Basically, I feel like it's something that could be taken away from me just like that. That's the thing about voting. That's how I look about voting. Every time I vote, I feel like I'm taking part in something. I'm part of the group. My voice was heard. I feel like I'm part of something when I vote. Maybe that's why people go to church. Anyway, the reason why I was thinking about voting, it's not because of next week, is because there's a story that came out at the beginning of this week, and I remember it's one of those articles I read on a Monday morning that just depressed me, and it was talking about the title, again, in the show notes. The title goes, "Police cameras show confusion, anger over DeSantis voter fraud's arrest." So it looks like DeSantis, who's on the list, when I talk about fuck Whitey, DeSantis makes that list. So in pure theater form, I guess he's going around. I read the article. Yeah, I did read the article. But it looks like he's going around having police arrest people suspected for voter fraud. And one situation, like, I don't know how do you suspect someone for voter fraud, but one person is like, hey, you have a criminal record. You know you're not supposed to be voting. I don't know if this is accurate, but that's not my point. The idea is, all these police, there's two clips that I see, two YouTube clips, and both involving black people, and the cops show up on these people and say, hey, you committed voter fraud. They don't go into details about like what constitutes voter fraud or whether they actually did or not. But I know the first character is, I guess he had a prison record. But none of them act like, okay, you got me. No, all of them are like, are you serious? Basically, all of them react the same way that I would react. Actually, if I were to walk into the voting booth tomorrow, I think it's, wait, when is voting? Sometimes tomorrow, Tuesday. And someone says, you're not allowed to vote. According to this, you have all these unpaid parking tickets. By the way, we don't let black people vote anymore. Unlike them, I wouldn't be like shocked. I'd be like, oh, okay, that's what I thought. I'm walking. It's kind of like I walk around expecting my right to vote to be taken away simply because I'm black. Or because I'm Haitian, or for whatever fucking reasons, like there's a white person. all you gotta do is have a white person stand in front of the voting booth and say, hey, you're not allowed to vote. And I'll be like, okay, I guess I'm not allowed anymore. That's why I gotta go voting with my white friends, because they'll be like, this is bullshit, bullshit. When I say white friends, I actually mean friends, actual friends. Meaning they're the type will be like, this is some bullshit. He's got every right to fucking vote in his fucking election. Anyway, yeah. They're that kind of white people. Anyway, yeah. So, the reason why this article got to me is I should mention, like, these police that doing the arresting, they feel weird about it. They're like, look, the instruction from on high was to arrest you. But you can sense that they're like, we don't enjoy doing this. We know this is wrong. Or whatever, but they feel like it's fucked up. They know this is like some fucking piece of theater that DeSantis, because for DeSantis, what he's doing is fucked up, but the people who support him love that shit because they believe in the voter fraud, because in their mind is like, who the fuck wouldn't vote for a Republican? Anyway, yeah, but they love this piece of theater. They love seeing this. Yeah, take that, nigger. Take that. That's what you get for voting. But for me, if cops were to, if I show up to the voting booth, and there's a cop there saying, if I vote and a cop arrests me for it, I'll be like, shit, look, man, I was just trying to be part of this Canadian family. It's kind of like I'd be expecting to be arrested. I mean, look, man, I thought I was allowed to vote. My white friends told me I was allowed to vote. I'd be like, I'd freak the fuck out. That's what I'm trying to say. All this to say, not only is this shit piece of theater for DeSantis, but for me, that shit would traumatize the fuck out of me. And I can imagine, I won't be surprised if there's a black person who sees this, who reads this story and going, I'm not going to vote. White man doesn't want me to. White man doesn't want me to participate in this society. It's. Yeah, I grew up with it, that idea that I'm the other of the society. The mighty white man, and what he allows me to do. Like with that idea, it's still engrossed in my idea. I'm saying it's a shitty thing what DeSantis is doing, and I'm also saying that I won't be surprised if there are black people out there who are traumatized watching this. Not to say that all black people have prison records, but I mean the idea of cops arresting you, hey, you weren't allowed to vote. It's like that can happen. I have this fear that I'm gonna vote and then someone's gonna say you weren't allowed to vote because you live in this address or some shit like that. It's like all of a sudden that you never paid your taxes, some shit like that. Like I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop when it comes to voting. But all this to say that, yeah, man. It's funny how us living in this very privileged country, this very privileged country, it's not funny, but it's a shame, funny, and sad, how we all live in this privileged country and we all take this voting shit for granted. Granted, I can't talk too much shit because I remember being that guy who didn't like voting, who didn't believe in voting because I thought it was I wasn't part of the society, but here we are. All right, last item I have on my which is how long are we? Oh wow, I'm over my time. Okay, so the last item I have on my agenda was I decided to do a grateful journal. By the way, this reminds me why I should record on Wednesday. But anyways, grateful journal. I decided to just list off five things that I was grateful for this week. No, four things. Wait, how come this thing? Did I put that in notes? Where am I? Bear with me. I'm going to let you leave, but I had a list of things that I felt the need to share with you that I'm grateful for. Apparently, some people recommend describing a grateful journal. That's not what I'm doing, but I'm just saying I feel the need to outline four things that I've been grateful for this week. Number one, someone this week contacted me to say and asked me if I wanted to do comedy for Black History Month. And for those who don't know, I used to do comedy and I'm taking a break from it. But it felt good to be remembered as that guy who used to do comedy. And I remember writing a message saying, hey, look, I'm taking a break from comedy. Then I referred them to a colleague, a friend of mine, who's seems to be ripping it lately. Like, you know, it's like shit. I'm actually getting jealous. But her name is Simone Holder, and she was I just see her name all over the place, and it kind of looks that she's got like you know Black Canadian comedy in Ottawa locked down. Anyway, so she's like some big name, so I referred her to her, and what I love is how when I referred to her, I Googled her, and she had a website with all the details they need to contact her, and it just had me think that, okay, if I ever get back into comedy, I'm gonna get my shit together like she does. Anyway, yeah, but I'm grateful for being able to, that person who reached out for me to do comedy, and being able to refer to him to someone else who has their shit together. Second thing I'm grateful for this week is on the weekend I had to work, even while having COVID. Yeah, the white man had to work, and it was just like IT shit, right? Just had to shut something down. Doesn't matter. My point is I was part of a project, and it ended today. And it felt good seeing that message from the person coordinating the project. And I knew it was a big deal because this motherfucker coordinated the project was like up people's ass to get this shit done. Anyways, it was good to see that it was over and getting that last email from that guy saying, thank you for all your work, blah, blah, blah. Because I can tell he was like, yo, I can check this motherfucker off. I've been wanting to get this thing done, and he got it done. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, okay, so that's two, three. Third one is... I do have five. Third one is every week I create a playlist of music that might be the title of this episode, but discovering a song. I love discovering new music, and this one that I recently discovered, it's called 7 Years by Lucas Graham. And it's a beautiful song, And once I was 7 years old, and apparently the song that inspired him to create it was the death of his father, who died at 61. And he's hoping that he becomes a father who's as great as his own father. It's a beautiful track that just got me like teared up and shit, man. And I'm always grateful when I discover like beautiful songs. And I'm also thinking about how I wonder, something that I said last week, I wonder if there was ever a moment, I'm sure there is, because if you're a creative person, you have your moment, but I'm trying to believe there was ever a moment after he wrote this song and he was worried whether people would like it. It just had me thinking of people who create something beautiful that the rest of us fucking enjoy. And I'm trying to imagine them having a moment where they were doubting the possibility that people would like it. Anyways, all this to say, Mr. Lucas Graham and his band or whatever, oh, they're from Denmark. I parle anglais en Denmark. Ça parle anglais en Denmark. Doesn't matter. It's a great song. That's the whole point of the song. And it's a great song. And I'm grateful that if he did have self-doubt when it came to, after writing that song, that he pushed through it. Third was, okay, so that was that three? Fuck. What is, hold on a second. Control Z. Putain meld. Oh, there. Okay. All right. One, two, finish the project. Three and four. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, okay. Four is being able. So this week I was, like I mentioned, I had COVID, but the one thing that I've been grateful is that I was able to take care of myself. Like my bill must've been fucking like, I was exaggerating. I'm saying like, so when I'm in TLC mode, TLC mode is like the emergency act for myself. And that means whatever I need to do to take care of myself, I fucking, I just go for it. Like later I'm going to look at my, I'm going to look at my bills and like how much I spent and I'm going to hate myself for it. I'm like the liberal government. That's what I'm saying. And all funds go into social services. So in my case, all my money went into just taking care of myself. So I was on the couch. I was doing Uber, Instacart, and I was spending money like a motherfucker and not feeling guilty about the fact that I was taking care of myself. Now, I'm talking shit about it, but I'm grateful that I have the ability to do that shit, even though later I'm going to hate myself to be like, fuck, you spent a lot of money this week on eating in and not cooking out. But there we are. What counts is I have the ability to take care of myself. And last but not least, because I have to have the number five things, this podcast, I'm grateful for this podcast, that it's my outlet, that it's the one time, I mean, I was complaining about that I wish I was, I could paint picture, I was an artist, or could write poems or rap songs, but no, my gift is this fucking podcast, I mean, this podcast, and I'm talking shit about it, but I'm grateful that I have this outlet available to me, and that's how I conclude today's episode 023, caught me busting off the roof. I could have called it niggas caught me busting off the roof, but I don't like using the N-word around white people. So yeah, so caught me busting off the roof, and I'm kind of hoping I'll get the attention of fans of the rapper Nas and the album Illmatic. This concludes today's episode. Holler at me on B Blizzak on Twitter or MrShutUpPodcast.com on Twitter. Actually, it's Shut Up Podcast on Twitter or B Blizzak. Website is shutuppodcast.com where you can find the show notes, everything that I discussed, links to everything that I discussed. And email address is, I don't know why my ribs are hitting. Email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. And to subscribe, you can use the RSS feed on the site or find us on Apple, Google Podcasts. Thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcast.